Let us turn in our Bibles to the Gospel of Luke in chapter 22. Luke's Gospel in chapter 22. One of the many things that has been adversely affected over the past year, apparently, has been the legal system. And the backlog in court cases is apparently considerable. And so however slow the legal system moved in the past, it is going even slower now. Have you ever noticed the pace at which it moves sometimes? Someone is arrested for a crime today, and although there may be a court appearance in the next couple of days to confirm name and address, the actual court case may not begin for another 9 months, and that may last anything up to several months before a verdict is announced, and then there will be another gap of several weeks or months before sentencing takes place. Now, it could be argued that that's how much time is required in order to collect and examine all the evidence. Better to take time and get it right, you may be thinking to yourself, rather than rush it and get it wrong. And yes, there is an element of truth in that. But what a contrast to what we see happening in these chapters of Luke's Gospel. Because we take one passage one Sunday and then return to the next passage the following Sunday, we perhaps don't appreciate the pace at which events were moving in the arrest and subsequent trial of Jesus. Although we have taken several weeks to cover chapter 22, the events of this chapter, or at least from verse 7 onwards, all occurred within the space of 24 hours. Having eaten that Passover meal with his disciples and having taken them out to the Mount of Olives to pray, Jesus is now arrested. And all of that was within the space of one evening. And he, having been arrested, he's now led away. And as he's led away, we see several things happening. And the first of those is in verses 54 to 60, and there we see the weakness of Jesus' followers. The weakness of Jesus' followers. Having arrested Jesus on the Mount of Olives, the chief priests, the officers of the temple guard, and the elders that we read about in verse 52, they now lead him away and take him into the house of the high priest. And then we read these words, verse 54, Peter followed at a distance. Peter followed at a distance. Now, before we go any further, it's worth noting that Peter did at least follow at a distance. From what we are told in the other gospel accounts, it appears that the other disciples had already deserted Jesus and fled. That's why the sermon point is the weakness of Jesus' followers, plural. The rest of his followers have already taken to their heels and ran for safety. Whereas Peter follows at a distance to see what happens to Jesus, no doubt out of a genuine concern for Jesus. And so whatever faults and failings we highlight in Peter's actions from now on, and there were some, and they were serious, let's not forget that out of the 12 disciples, he was the one who followed Jesus to the house of the high priest. And having got there, he found himself mingling amongst all sorts of people. And when they sat down to keep warm by a fire, he sat down with him. This was at night, before the invention of the halogen lamp. And so the only light available was from the open fire. And if you've ever sat round an open fire at night, if you've ever had a bonfire and sat round it, then you'll know that the light from it comes and goes as the flames flicker in and out. That's why the servant girl who saw Peter in the firelight, she wanted to have a closer look at him. And as she did so, she came to the conclusion that she had seen him with Jesus. Verse 56, this man was with him. But he denied it. Verse 57, woman, I don't know him. A little later, someone else saw him and said, you also are one of them, i.e. one of his followers. But in response, Peter said, verse 58, man, I am not. About an hour later still, and someone else says, verse 59, certainly this fellow was with him, for he is a Galilean. Although the light from an open fire may be intermittent at times, poor light doesn't affect your hearing. And as they have heard Peter speak on at least a couple of occasions, someone in the company has noticed that he doesn't speak with a typical Jerusalem accent. Instead, he has a strong northern accent. And he hasn't been the last person in history to have been blessed with one of those. The problem, however, on this occasion is that his northern accent has given him away as a Galilean and therefore confirms the earlier suspicions that he is one of Jesus' inner circle. Certainly, this fellow was with him, for he is a Galilean. You may remember that a number of Jesus' closest disciples were recruited while Jesus was up in Galilee. But in response, Peter says, verse 60, man, I don't know what you're talking about. And in that, we see the weakness of Jesus' followers. Do you see now why Jesus taught his disciples to pray the prayer of verse 40? Pray that you will not fall into temptation. That's why they needed to pray that prayer. Three times now, Peter has been challenged about his association with Jesus, and three times he has denied having anything whatsoever to do with him. And what makes it even more frightening is that this is the very man who said a few hours earlier, verse 33, Lord, I am ready to go with you to prison and to death. But now that the challenge concerning his relationship to Jesus Christ has come, he takes the easy road out and denies having anything to do with Jesus. That is the weakness of Jesus' followers. And I suspect that it is a weakness that some of us can identify with to some extent this morning. Can we not? We've been in church on a Sunday, and we've expressed our allegiance to Jesus Christ in a variety of ways, not least in what we've sung, maybe not over the past year, but on previous occasions. We've sung, my Jesus, I love thee, I know thou art mine. I will love thee in life, I will love thee in death, and praise thee as long as thou lendest me breath. Be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart, riches I heed not, nor man's empty praise. Thou mine inheritance now and always, thou and thou only, first in my heart. High King of heaven, my treasure thou art. Take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to thee. Take my lips and let them be filled with messages from thee. And within 24 hours of singing those words, we have perhaps found ourselves in the lecture theatre, or in the workplace, or in the supermarket, or in conversation with our friends. And what we discover is that it's one thing to express our allegiance to Jesus Christ in song, in church, but it's another thing to express it in real life. Rather than being filled with messages from thee, as we sang the day before, there may have been times when our lips have been characterized by denials of thee. Oh yes, Peter is not the last follower of Jesus to find himself in this situation. It may be that when the crunch has come, we have preferred to safeguard the allegiance of our family and friends rather than safeguard our allegiance to Jesus Christ. It may be that when the crunch has come, the thought of losing our street cred has become the unthinkable thing rather than the thought of denying our Lord. It may be that when the crunch has come, we have made our friendships or our career progression or our respectability and our acceptability within society, it may be that we've made that a higher priority than our love and loyalty to Jesus Christ. And as a consequence, we've done what Peter did, and we have opted to deny, or at the very least, downplay our relationship to the Lord, whose praises we've sung the day before in church. That was the weakness of Jesus' followers back then. And the reason it's recorded for us here is not so that we can look back 2,000 years and shake our heads and say, "Tut, what a terrible guy that Peter was. Why did Jesus ever have anything whatsoever to do with him?" The reason it's recorded for us is that so we might sit up and identify the same temptations and the same failures in our own experience. Because this continues to be the weakness of Jesus' followers. Secondly, verses 61 to 65, and there we see the certainty of Jesus' words. The certainty of Jesus' words. Now, from what we are told in these verses, it appears that Jesus was being held in a part of the high priest's house that overlooked the courtyard where Peter and the other disciples were situated. I say that because we are told in verse 61 that the Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. And as the two made eye contact, Peter suddenly remembered something that Jesus had previously said. Back in verse 34, following Peter's bold statement that he would be willing to go to prison or even to die with Jesus, Jesus had said to him, "I tell you, Peter, before the cock crows today, you will deny three times that you know me." And sure enough, as Peter was making his third denial, a cock did crow. And the recollection of those words of Jesus, coupled with this look from Jesus, caused Peter to realize the seriousness of what he has just done, so much so verse 62 tells us that he went outside and he wept bitterly. And as Peter was outside weeping bitterly over his denial of Jesus, Luke now shifts his attention to what is happening inside to Jesus. Verse 63 tells us that the men who were guarding Jesus began mocking and beating him. They blindfolded him and demanded, "Prophesy, who hit you?" And they said many other insulting things to him. Or as other translations have it, and they said many other things against him, blaspheming him. In their blasphemy, they have submitted Jesus to a game of blind man's buff. Do you remember playing that as a child? Where you were blindfolded with a scarf or someone, and somebody came up and touched you, and you used to try and catch them or figure out who it was that had done it. Well, here is an ancient but much more serious version of that. Jesus is blindfolded, and as they strike him and hit him, he has to try and identify who it is that's hit him. In addition to the physical pain, it's blasphemy, because they're asking him, please note, they're asking him not merely to guess, but they're asking him to prophesy. They are obviously mocking his previous claims to be the Christ who has come from God. If such claims were true, they were effectively saying, then surely you can prophesy and you can tell us blindfolded who it is that has just hit you. Little did they know that their cruel, blasphemous behavior demonstrated that he could prophesy. It was back in chapter 18 that we read of Jesus taking his disciples aside and telling them, we are going up to Jerusalem, and everything that is written by the prophets about the Son of Man will be fulfilled. He will be turned over to the Gentiles. They will mock him, insult him, spit on him, flog him. Well, he's still officially to be handed over to the Gentiles, but the mocking and the spitting and the beating has already started. Demonstrating not only the certainty of what the Old Testament prophets had said, but also demonstrating the certainty of what Jesus has said. Do you see the connection between this incident in verses 63 to 65 and the previous one in verses 61 and 62? Both demonstrate the truthfulness and the certainty of Jesus' words. Back in verse 34, Jesus had said that before the cock crowed, Peter would deny him three times, and he did. Back in chapter 18, Jesus said that he would be mocked and beaten and spat upon, and he was. That is the certainty of Jesus' words. And if his disciples had grasped this truth, it would have helped them through this very difficult time. Because it would have reminded them that Jesus not only spoke to them in the past about his suffering and about his death, he had also spoken in advance to them about his resurrection.